this hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So the Seahawks signed free agent defensive end Aldon Smith. It's a one-year deal. I hear he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's been good in the past, yes.
He comes to us from Dallas?
San Francisco, Dallas, yeah, all the above. Oakland, too.
It's a lot of teams.
Yeah, he's bounced around a little bit.
Not by choice.
No, not really.
Right?
Well, I mean, he made a choice at one point, multiple times.
Well, yeah, he made, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm not going to count that one. At least 7 choices that might have had an impact on teams choosing to simply release him despite having some very clear talent. He has a past that one might deem problematic, especially for the Seahawks, which said at one point that they were not going to take on players with certain backgrounds, criminal backgrounds, specifically as it relates to domestic violence. This is a team that declares its wokeness, right? Pretty frequently. They're all about leaning into some of the political causes that Seattle shares. And they're celebrated, certainly, right, by Seattle activists. The team has certainly changed a little bit from a political standpoint when Michael Bennett left and Richard Sherman, but that identity is sort of still there. Russell Wilson has gotten a little bit more political as of, right, the last couple of years than he's been in the past, certainly. So it seems bizarre to me that they would make this acquisition. So I just went to his Wikipedia page because they make it very easy. They have a whole section called Legal Issues.
Yeah, which usually isn't a norm for athletes on Wikipedia. You got to be a really special kind of athlete to have a whole section dedicated to legal issues.
I will give you glass half full rants for a moment. No murders.
No murders, yeah. I mean, he's down in that stat compared to some other NFL players.
Yeah, so that's good. January 2012, he was arrested for DUI in Florida. Okay, athlete, 2012 is a long ways away behind us. Maybe a mistake. Because he's a young guy-ish.
Yeah, 2012, yeah.
Okay. That was 2013. He was charged with 3 felony counts of illegal possession of an assault weapon relating to a stabbing incident in June of the previous year. Charges were later reduced to misdemeanors.
Okay. There we go.
I mean, yeah. September, same year, Smith was involved in a single vehicle accident in San Jose, California. He was subsequently arrested on suspicion of DUI and possession of weed. After the loss to the Colts in the third week of the football season, he voluntarily entered a rehab facility to be put onto the non-football injury list with indefinite leave of absence. So, maybe he was dealing with something.
Sure.
An addiction.
Understandable. He seems to take a measure to, try and fix it.
And look, that's not easy for anybody. An athlete of that age, it's certainly not easy, but good for him for seeking help. April 13th, 2014. Smith was detained and arrested following an incident at the Los Angeles International Airport in which Smith became belligerent and uncooperative with a TSA agent. I mean, who amongst us? Who alleged Smith claimed he was carrying a bomb. After interviews revealed that Smith did not clearly state he was carrying a bomb, the LA city attorney decided to drop the charges. I mean, that's a sign that he clearly didn't do anything wrong. Oh, Smith was suspended for 9 games for the 2014 season. Never mind. That seems awfully weird to happen after being cleared, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe there might be something more to that story. Oh, we're still... There's
a few more.
August 6, 2015, Smith was arrested in Santa Clara, California for an alleged hit and run after driving under the influence and vandalism charges. Sensing a bit of a trend. September 23rd. It was announced that Smith had agreed to plead no contest to hit and run in the 2015 incident in exchange for the DUI charges being dropped. He was sentenced to 20 days in jail. Okay. Oh, this is a biggie. This next one. I mean, should we go over it?
Oh, I mean, we're already this deep in. We've spent a good chunk of this What's Trending on him.
March 3rd, 2018, someone called the police from Smith's home and reported that he consumed multiple bottles of tequila and then bit her wrists. Smith reportedly fled the home before police arrived. San Francisco police did not comment on the specifics, but did state that the domestic violence of a non-lethal nature had occurred, and they were seeking out Smith for questioning about the incident. On March 23rd, Smith was arrested for violation of a court order where he was ordered to stay away from a woman he assaulted earlier in the month. The woman was revealed to be his fiancée. This picked up from a previous incident that occurred on March 3rd, where Smith pleaded not guilty on 4 misdemeanor counts, including domestic violence, assault with force likely to produce great bodily harm, false imprisonment, and vandalism. On April 8th, Smith was arrested for violations in conditions to his bail. So, if you're going to be a team that wants to take on anyone for the sake of their talent, and you're willing to take risks, and certainly this is a team that has said, we will take on some players who have some personality quirks, right? Some trouble potentially in the locker room, and we bring them into our system, and they end up working for us in our system. That's one thing. But why go out on a limb and say you're just not going to take people who have certain criminal histories? Why do that if you're not going to stick to it? It gives off the impression that you weren't being serious, that you were just saying things for the social currency at the time. We've had the conversation on this show, not specific to the Seahawks, but in a more general sense, that this league has a bad track record when it comes to punishing the worst of the worst, and yet if you smoke weed, you're done for 5, 6, 7 games.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Gordon got blackballed out of the league for smoking weed, and Aldon Smith got, 9 games at most for his bomb incident? But
what did Frank Clark do, allegedly?
He hit a woman.
So, beat a wife, beat a girlfriend. Who was the athlete in the elevator?
Ray Rice.
What did he do?
He hit his girlfriend.
Really brutally.
Knocked her out.
Yeah. What happened to him?
Like a 2-game suspension? No. Maybe a 4-game suspension? Maybe.
He wasn't kicked out of the league, though.
No, he played after that.
How long?
A few years.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon, same thing.
Yeah. It's just bizarre to me. And I know that I'm not making a fresh take here. Others have pointed this out. I just wonder when things will change a little bit. Just a little bit. And when will we stop turning to athletes when they have something political to say? You're in a league that gives a pass to this kind of behavior, but when you speak out against what your perception is of police brutality or racism or equity or whatever, we're supposed to all pay close attention and pretend that, oh, well, Colin Kaepernick is speaking. Michael Bennett is speaking. He knows what he's talking. We should listen to him. These are athletes who are leaders. Why don't they speak up and talk about their teammates who are accused of really horrible things that actually hurt people? Is that not weird to anybody? Okay. Just to me? Okay. Could we at least not punish people so hard for weed? How about that? Is that a compromise?
That makes a whole lot of sense, but Goodell's got something against marijuana for some reason.
Dudes are getting hit on the field really hard. I'm okay if they smoke weed legally. Medicinally, you could make the argument that they've kind of earned it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It's going to help them in some ways.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. I am kind of curious how the woke Seattle activists will react to this. Because they're all about, they stand for women. Right?
Yeah. We'll see if they're...
Let's see if they root for Aldon Smith.
Yeah, they're cheering at the start of the season.
I remembered his name.
Hey, yeah. Good job.
I didn't have to look it up.
Wow.
I just... Aldon Smith, because I like the name. It's a cool name. It's Regal.
That's like twice that you've said names are Regal, like back-to-back days.
Yeah.
How's producer Peyton? Is that a Regal name?
No, it's stupid. Everyone gets it wrong. They spell it with an E, because they're spelling it correctly, I think.
No, it's always with an A. Please spell with an A.
Find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRance. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies. Now that movies are back in theaters and, of course, out on demand, Vanquish stars Morgan Freeman as a crooked cop who kidnaps the daughter of his caretaker, played by Ruby Rose. She's inexplicably a former Russian drug courier who I think has an Australian accent. Freeman forces her into picking up money from unsavory characters. She only has to do 5 drops for him, and then she gets her daughter back.
Where is she?
You do what I tell you to do, and everything will be just fine. I need you tonight using some of your old skills. 5 stops, 5 pickups.
There are too many people waiting for me to make this mistake.
You ran drugs for the Russians. You were a courier in and out of Moscow.
Who is she?
You know who she is. Just stay out of her way.
Okay, so Vanquish is near indescribably awful. It is awful. The story is an absolute nonsensical mess. The acting is fairly atrocious across the board. It's bland. It's cheesy. It kind of feels like a low-rate, late-night movie that you would expect straight to video on demand, and yet somehow it lands Morgan Freeman as the star. Nothing about this movie works. Literally nothing about this movie works. It even manages to botch things as simple as just basic editing. Scenes kind of jump cut as if it were an 80s ballad music video with like this slow motion fade into rough cuts and close-ups. It is truly awful. It lacks any suspense, even though it's supposed to be an action thriller. It is truly unwatchable. I don't normally do this, yet last night I stopped watching it about 40 minutes into the movie. It was that bad. I gave it a second try this morning. It was still awful. I couldn't finish it. I still have about 20 minutes to go. I have no interest in seeing how this movie ends. If you watch this movie, you hate yourself. However, I recommend it highly to your liberal friends. I recommend you tell them that this is the best movie of the year, and any of your friends who is a progressive Democrat, you should be like, this is the movie for you. Strong female character lead. They'll love it. Just if you really want to mess with them, you should recommend Vanquish to them. But to you, don't. Please don't. It's awful. Please don't see it. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
So tomorrow, apparently hundreds of people are going to help pick up litter all across the city of Tacoma. Carol 7 TV's Michelle Millman has some details.
This is part of a citywide trash pickup event organized by a grassroots group against litter. Anyone who wants to help can show up at one of 27 locations around Tacoma. The first 10 people at each spot get a free litter grabber. Everyone who helps will get a free tote bag.
He'll end up just throwing in the trash, and it'll end up just getting... what? Put into some... I would just probably throw it in an alleyway.
You're not even going to get it into a tray. No. You would litter the tote bag?
I would litter the tote bag that they're giving away for... Do you use it to pick up the litter? So you're only giving 10 of the litter picker-upper thingies?
It just sounds like a bad plan.
So how are people supposed to pick up? They're supposed to just come in with big, heavy-duty gloves?
No, bare hands. Why would you want gloves? Don't you want to be one with Mother Nature and everything?
Shouldn't
that
they make this more appealing to people? It is gorgeous out, right?
Very.
It is amazing. It is a gorgeous day for a baseball game, a soccer game. Sounders' first game of the season is tonight. I'm excited about that. Like, could you do something more than say, hey, why don't you come on down, Tacomanites, Tacomans, Tacomaninians, and pick up after the homeless people that we've allowed to pretty much go everywhere, despite the fact that just last week we did a story literally about how we're going to hire homeless people to clean stuff up, but apparently we couldn't get it in order fast enough. So instead, we're going to ask you to come on down. Do it for free, by the way, though we're not going to give you any sort of tax break. We're going to have you pay your taxes as you normally would during a COVID pandemic, which, by the way, we're telling everybody not to do anything, except we did say from the governor, do it outside. So I guess we're going to do it outside. But see that over there? No, not. That's human waste. Don't pick that up over there. That's the plastic bag. Although you can reuse that plastic bag to pick up that human waste that we need to clean up because we've allowed homelessness to get completely out of control in our city. That's what you're going to do on a beautiful Saturday?
So I'm assuming you're not going to be down in Tacoma helping out Jason?
No, I'm going to Snohomish because they're doing one.
Good.
They're doing it at Kayak Point Park tomorrow.
Oh, hey, that used to be a golf course, and now it's like a disc golf only place.
How much trash could be at Kayak Park?
Disc golfers like to just litter, I guess. They're bad for the environment.
It is weird that one is 27 different sites within Tacoma, and yet, in Snohomish County, it's just at this one park.
Tacoma likes Earth Day more, I guess. Is it like?
It's not Earth Day tomorrow. Earth Day is 4/20.
It is?
Yeah, 4/20, right?
Well, you got celebrated on the weekend. Don't you push, like, minuscule holidays?
No, you celebrate 4/20.
I meant Earth Day, not 4/20.
Is Earth Day tomorrow? No. Oh, no, I was wrong, too. It's 22.
Oh, it's Thursday. Wow. Why would they put it on? Just make it a Saturday. Make it like one of those Easter holidays where it's like every third Saturday of
the trash
April.
Has risen.
That was so much better than all of your cheese references.
Oh, shut up.
From earlier.
All my stuff is good. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
You know who interviewed Dr. Fauci?
I mean, Rand Paul. Jim Jordan.
I mean, I interviewed Dr. Fauci.
Jason Rance.
All right. Well, what's happening, man? You got Marshawn Lynch here, man. Better known as
Marshawn
the
Lynch.
Boy, the kid, beast mode, man.
It's
a pleasure to meet the
spit it out.
The Dr. Fauci himself. You understand me? What's happening, big dog?
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Marshawn.
What if he did the same back?
That would be so cool.
Or racist.
No.
Yes.
It wouldn't be racist.
I think it would. Yo, beast mode. What if he did something like that?
It would be hip. It'd be for the kids.
Okay, so they got serious really quickly.
All right, so let's go there.
Where do you think they're going to go? I said serious.
Talk about Skittles and the
health. I was being serious. They got serious. They talked about why black people are hesitant about the COVID vaccine.
That's a good point. So first thing is that you have to understand that I do, and certainly many of my colleagues, totally respect the reluctance that African Americans have about things like this, because you're absolutely right. The history of how the federal government, going back decades, particularly in the area of medical issues, how they've treated African Americans has not been something that to be proud of.
Is that good enough tease for people to want to tune into the rest? It's on his YouTube channel.
I'll check it out. I like Marshawn. I like everything that Marshawn does.
Insufferable. I can't stand him either. Oh. I don't like his personality.
Guy's funny.
It's annoying. I liked it actually better when he wouldn't talk. That's how he should have done the interview.
I'm just here
Fauci
so I won't get fined.
If I just like, do you have a question? I'm just here so I won't get fined. You invited me. I'm just here so I won't get fined. But what question do you have? I'm just here so I won't get fined. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Democrats didn't even waste any time waiting for this blue ribbon commission from the Biden administration to come forward with their thoughts on packing the court. They say the only way to save democracy is to destroy the Supreme Court, turn it inherently political by packing it, adding four extra liberal jurists to the court, which then, of course, would ensure that all of their policy prescriptions that are clearly unconstitutional would get the thumbs up from the court. Joining me on the line is a friend of the show, friend of mine, Josh Hammer. He is the opinion editor over at Newsweek. He is also a constitutional attorney. Josh, welcome back.
Oh, it was great to be back with you, Jason.
So you've got a piece out right now for Newsweek on this ill-considered idea coming from a group of leftists. I think, you know, Jerry Nadler, the congressman from New York, his involvement in this is a little bit stunning because I think he is considered a mainstream Democrat, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of comes from that kind of, you know, I mean, he's from New York. You know, he kind of comes from a slightly more hawkish kind of pro-Israel wing of the party. So, yeah, I mean, he's considered to be somewhat towards the middle of the caucus. I mean, Ed Markey, who's, of course, the Senate lead sponsor of this, has gone off the deep end in recent years, it seems. But, yeah, it's a really shameful political stunt. In addition to my piece, I would flag for your listeners, there's a great op-ed out today by Professor Phil Hamburger of Columbia Law School in the Wall Street Journal, who kind of goes into a little more detail than I go into in my piece about kind of the history of these tactics, because what we see over and over again going back 100, even before FDR, even before FDR's infamous court packing scheme, going back 100, 150 years or so, is what they do is they put this out there as a way to kind of cow into submission and intimidate centrist or centrist-leaning judges to shift to the left. That is a tactic over and over again. I think that's probably what Democrats are trying to do now. Chief Justice Roberts is, you know, he's basically become a full David Souter again, or he's certainly getting there very quickly. So I guess what they're thinking is, if I had to guess what their calculus is here, they're probably trying to pick off more justices than just him. So I guess we'll see what happens. But it's kind of the same old, same old. It's certainly pretty shameful, though.
So let's assume for the sake of argument that is their strategy. They maybe get John Roberts to go further to the left. He's still a conservative, but let's just say he goes all in. He's now with the left wing of the court. Conservatives still have the majority. I mean, Chuck Schumer basically did this strategy with the Supreme Court, saying you're going to rue the day where you're going to regret it. And the court clearly hasn't shifted since then, at least in the majority. Right. The conservatives still hold the majority.
So they do, right? I mean, right now there's obviously a 6-3 Republican nominated majority. The Chief Justice, I mean, I guess we can call him a conservative still, right? I mean, but that gets shakier by the day. I mean, most recently there was kind of the California, you know, pray in your own home case, or if you join the liberal bloc, 5-4 decision right there. Look, I tend to be pessimistic about most things SCOTUS related. Justice Clarence Thomas is obviously as rock solid as they come, really, in the history of the court. Justice Sam Alito is another great conservative. Really, everyone else, I think, is something a little less than that, honestly. But yes, numerically, there is an advantage. It's going to be really telling for me, at least, to see how Justice Barrett comes out later this term, when some of this term's kind of, you know, big cases start to come out. That's going to be a really, really, really important data point. But there's all sorts of kind of troubling indications about the current composition of the court in general. They've now dilly dallied for months and months on a 15-week abortion ban out of the state of Mississippi. That case is coming out of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is the court that I clerked on a few years ago. And you only need 4 votes to grant cert in order to hear a case. And they really should have 4 votes for that. So it's unclear who is not voting to hear this very important abortion case. But look, we will see. But I the left is shameless as far as what they're trying to do. They view the court as an overtly political institution. We'll see how Republicans could possibly respond to that.
Josh Hammer joining me on the line. He is the Newsweek opinion editor himself, a constitutional attorney by trade. Is it fair to look at issues that have been quote unquote well established, like abortion, when judging the makeup of this court? Doesn't it seem like, regardless of whether or not you've got liberals or conservatives in power, that on those bigger issues, that they have a tendency not to just be eager to overturn?
So eager to overturn is one of the most, I mean, from my perspective, that's one of the most important factors that Republicans should be looking for as far as judicial nominations are concerned. Lawyers call this stare decisis, right? It's the Latin term that refers to kind of how you view precedent. And the relationship between precedent and your constitutional oath is kind of, it's hotly debated, I would say, in constitutional law circles. I had an essay on this for National Affairs Journal last fall, basically outlining my view, which is very similar to Justice Thomas's view, which is basically that where precedent is in conflict with the Constitution has to prevail because your oath is to the Constitution, not as the Constitution has been misinterpreted by, you know, a bare 5-4 majority. So I totally agree with you. If I'm being totally candid here, I was a little skeptical of some of the things I actually heard from Justice Barrett about stare decisis, about precedent. Justice Kavanaugh, too, has kind of staked out kind of a middle-of-the-road approach. Justice Gorsuch, to his credit, seems to be kind of right there with Justice Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the abortion case last summer, the June medical case, where the Chief Justice took this, I would say, comical, kind of farcical view of stare decisis. So that's something that Republicans and conservatives have to pay close attention to.
They do. So let's go into the politics of this all. Democrats here are obviously playing to a base. I made the argument just a couple days ago that even just talking about this sends the wrong message. We see it unfolding frequently. We're seeing it unfold right now in Minnesota, where you've got people who are literally, as they're chanting, no justice, no peace, burning cities down for months. I mean, this is mob rule. When you say no justice, no peace, in the context that it's being said, they're saying if you don't enact justice as they see it, they will enact violence. That's not justice at all. That's mob.
It is mob rule. And you know what? I mean, it increasingly seems to me, Jason, that America has just lost its ability to kind of temper its own passions and govern itself through the existing political constitutional institutions that exist in America. But, you know, if we go back to, you know, my personal favorite figure in American history, Abraham Lincoln, in his Lyceum address in 1838, so this was kind of the early stages of Abraham Lincoln's political career. He was in his late 20s at the time, if I recall. He famously said, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he famously said something along the lines of, there is no issue in our politics that is fit for redress by mob rule. None. And this is as the union is splintering, right? This is like the greatest crisis of the regime in American history, and he is still saying this. We've forgotten our ability to kind of seek to persuade, seek to kind of meet someone in the center of political reasonable discourse. It's really sad. And, you know, obviously January 6th was kind of the first snippet of, you know, maybe some people and kind of the fringe elements of the quote-unquote far right, I guess, who did something similar. But it really seems that it's more of a mainstream left-wing mentality that mob rule is proper, and it's just so alien and anathema to our tradition. It's obviously quite sad to see.
Does it cause political headaches for the Democrats, or is it just too far gone? It just seems like I expect this from the Democratic Party at this point.
Yeah. I think I'm with you, honestly. I mean, they kind of, like, last summer we saw this, right? I mean, kind of like in July and August with the Biden campaign and, you know, ultimately the Biden-Harris joint ticket, they would kind of, like, rhetorically, like, mouth out of their mouths on the one side, kind of rote condemnations, if you will, of Antifa in Portland and all sorts of this other nonsense. Well, on the other hand, you know, Kamala Harris was going up to Wisconsin and was playing nice with all like the violence there. So they're really trying to have it both ways. It seems to me like they're just trying to have it both ways and everything. To kind of get back to what we started talking about, I mean, Nancy Pelosi seems like she's trying to have it both ways, too. She has said that she will not bring this court packing bill to the House floor on the one hand, but on the other hand, she says she supports President Biden's commission, which is looking into expanding the size of the Supreme Court. So she's clearly trying to have it both ways. Joe Biden himself is probably trying to have it both ways. With mm-hmm. the whole point of this commission. So hypocrisy has just become the new standard.
But yeah, should Republicans just play into it then? Just call the bluff? Just push it? Say, okay, let's vote on it. They know they don't have the votes. The Democrats, there are not enough Democrats in the House or in the Senate right now to pass this.
it's not a bad move, right? I mean, if anything, I mean, look, I think simply introducing this bill is going to hurt Democrats in the polls next year. I haven't seen the most up-to-date Pew or Gallup polling, whatever, but I certainly during the presidential election when this was being polled, core packing was very unpopular with independent and moderate voters.
My point is it pisses off the electorate, and at the same time, when the Democrats don't actually pass it because they don't have the vote, it pisses off the base. So it's all good for Republicans.
Yeah, no, I think that's good political strategy, honestly. They should get out there and start writing op-eds. I mean, someone listening, you can send an op-ed my way. Just basically let's do it.
Dude, that's literally going to be my next Newsweek column, of which you will be editing.
You should do it, my friend.
I'm going to be submitting that this weekend for publication, hopefully on Tuesday, followed by a conversation with Harris Faulkner on Fox News. Josh Hammer. Josh is my editor, by the way, at Newsweek. He is the opinions editor over at Newsweek. You should check out the piece, newsweek.com. I've also tweeted out a link to it. Josh, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Anytime.
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on this Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I really do appreciate it. Don't forget, you can follow me on my new YouTube channel. Just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to the channel. Of course, you can go directly onto YouTube. Just search Jason Rants or youtube.com/JasonRantsShow, and you'll get the ability to subscribe to the page. Anytime I do any Fox News hits, for example, earlier this morning, I did a hit with Stuart Varney on Varney and Company for Fox Business, talking about one of my blogs from this week of the BLM activist in Seattle who is now accused of 2 hate crimes against 3 Asian American women. We talked about that. The video is up right now at youtube.com/JasonRants. I want to talk a little bit about the cancel culture mob and this idea that characters that are voiced by folks who don't ethnically identify or represent the characters, even when we're talking about cartoons, is somehow offensive. It obviously wasn't, quote-unquote, offensive at the time that a lot of these characters were created. I would argue it's not really offensive now. We're merely pretending that it's offensive. But because we are in this hypersensitive world now in which we're going to pretend that you're not supposed to do this, that we're not supposed to have colorblind casting, which I thought was woke, but it turns out it's only woke when the colorblind casting positively impacts people of color. We're canceling characters, either out of peer pressure or we're literally getting things canceled. In the case of Hank Azaria, who was the voice of Apu from The Simpsons, he made the choice, and we put that in air quotes because I don't know if it's a choice when you're peer pressured in this way, to end his portrayal of the character. As you'll recall, he's the Indian Quickie Mart owner, Apu, and he's not going to do any more because Hank Azaria is a white dude, although he's Italian. He is not Indian. And in stepping down from this character, he talked recently, I think it was on this week's podcast called The Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard, an actor. He talked about his decision to get rid of this role from his repertoire. And he talked about all of these regrets that he had over this character. And for him, he was impacted when some Indian children, or one child, came up to him, was almost in tears, he said, because of his portrayal of this character.
I mean, it's like I talked to one student in particular I was speaking to at my son's school. I was talking to the Indian students there. I wanted to get their input. 17-year-old boy, maybe a year ago, maybe two years. He's never even seen The Simpsons. Doesn't know from it, really, but knows what Apu means. It's practically a slur at this point.
Okay, hold on. It is not a slur. It's not practically a slur. It's not even close to a slur. It is not a slur. It is not a slur, period. If it was a slur at this point, practically or otherwise, we would not still air The Simpsons, any of the old episodes, would we? We would not allow them to be on Disney Plus or whatever other streaming service it's on. We would not be selling them to anyone, right, without a big warning label on it. So let's stop that right now.
All he knows is this is how his people are thought of and represented to many people in this country.
But hold on. You said he doesn't even know what the character is. He's never watched the show. So that's a little bizarre to me.
Still, with tears in his eyes, he said to me, and it was so sweet the way he put it. He said, will you please tell the writers in Hollywood that what they do and what they come up with really matters in people's lives, like it has consequences?
Oof.
Yeah. And I was like, yes, my friend, I will tell them that. I said to him, and I'm going to say to you right now, I really do apologize. I know this, you weren't asking for that, but it's important. Hmm. You know, I apologize for my part in creating that, in participating in that. You know, part of me feels like I need to go around to every single Indian person in this country and personally apologize. And sometimes I do when it
buy
comes
them
up.
All a Dairy Queen. You owe every single Indian a Dairy Queen.
Okay, so what bothers me the most in that is the ending of that clip. Not that he wants to apologize because he feels like he hurt people, right? But that he thinks every Indian thinks the same way as this one kid that he had this interaction with. There are so many people who believe that because one Indian is offended by an Indian character, that means all Indians are offended. Or one black person is offended by a black character, all black people are offended. Or one Jew, or one gay, or one Muslim, or one whatever. That because you're representative of a minority group, a community of color, whatever it happens to be, that somehow you're all monolithic. We all think alike. But we're not monolithic. I don't represent every single gay Jew. I don't represent every single talk show host. I don't represent every single Italian. I don't represent every single male. I don't represent every single incredibly good-looking, smart, well-natured, sarcastic, humble person. We represent ourselves. Now, if he came to his decision on his own because he just felt bad about this character and what he believed it was doing, that would be one thing, but very clearly he doesn't. And we know that because of how it's being talked about. We know that because of the cultural conversations coming from one ideological side that is seeking to change culture. Cultures change on their own. There's no doubt about that, and there's nothing wrong with that. Cultures evolve. This is forced. And it's coming from an ideological perspective. It's not coming because of an organic change in the culture. One kid came up to him, and let's say even 10 kids or 12 or 1,000, and he wants to say sorry to every single Indian. Well, what if Indian kids came up to you and said they're not offended? What if an equal amount of Indian kids came up to you and said they're not offended? Would you then change your mind and say, actually, maybe I'll keep doing Apu? Probably not. Because you would argue, well, I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want anyone to feel bad, even if it's an equal amount of people who support it. Well, if that's the case, you're never going to make anyone happy. You've been listening to The Jason Rand Show, making people happy 3 hours a day, every day, since 1982, when I was born. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. I will see you all on Monday. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.